6. Johnny sat high on the blade machine. The aching cold wind blew puffs of snow, momentarily obscuring the compound. Johnny's attention was caught by the approaching crowd. Their combined footfalls made the earth shake. The place chosen for the demonstration was a small plateau jutting out from the compound. It was a few thousand square feet in extent, but ended in a sharp-edged cliff that dropped more than 200 feet into a ravine. There was room to maneuver, but one had to stay away from that edge. Turl came stomping toward him through the light snow. He stepped up on the lower frame of the blade machine to put his huge face near Johnny's.
"See that crowd?" said Turl.
Johnny looked at them. They were gathered by the compound.
Zzt
was over to their left.
"See this speaker?"
said Turl. He jostled a speaking horn thing in his hand. He had used it before in the drilling.
"See this blaster?"
said Turl, and he patted a belt handgun he had buckled on, a huge thing.
"If you do one thing wrong,"
said Turl,
"or foul up in any way, I will gun you right off that rig. You'll be very dead. Splatter dead."
Turl reached up and made sure the leash was secure. He had wrapped it around the roll bar and welded the end to the rear bumper. It didn't leave much room for Johnny to move. His instructions had gone unheard by the small crowd. Now, Turl approached them and turned, stood with his huge feet apart, seemed to swell, and yelled,
"Start it up!"
Johnny started it up. He felt uneasy. A sixth sense was biting him, like when you had a puma behind you that you hadn't seen. It wasn't Turl's threats. It was something else. He looked over the crowd.
"Raise the blade," roared Turl through the horn.
Johnny did.
"Lower the blade."
Johnny did.
"Roll it ahead."
Johnny did.
"Back it up."
Johnny did.
"Put it in a circle."
Johnny did.
"Now build a mound of snow from all angles."
Johnny started maneuvering, handling the controls, taking light scrapes of snow, pushing them to a center. He was doing better than just making a mound. He was building a square-sided pile and leveling off its top. He worked rapidly, backing up, pushing in more snow. The precisely geometric mound took shape. He had just one more run to make inward, a run that would carry him toward the cliff a few hundred feet away. Suddenly, the controls did not respond. There had been a prolonged whirring whine in the guts of the control box, and every knob and lever on the control panel went slack. The blade machine yawed to the right, yawed to the left. Johnny hammered at the slack controls. Nothing bit. The blade abruptly rose high in the air. The machine rumbled relentlessly forward and rose up to the top of the pile, almost somersaulted over backward. At the top, it slammed down flat. Then it almost did a forward flip as it went down the other side. It was rolling straight toward the cliff edge. Johnny punched the kill button time after time, but it had no effect on the roaring engine. He fought the controls. They stayed slack. Wildly, he looked back at the crowd. He got a fleeting impression of Zzt far off to the side. The brute had something in its paw. Johnny strained at the collar that held him to this deadly machine. He tugged at the flexi-rope. It was as unyielding as ever. The cliff edge was coming nearer. There was a manual blade control to his left, held by a hook. Johnny fought to get the hook loose. If he could drop the blade, it might stick and hold. The hook wouldn't let go. Johnny grabbed in his pocket for a fire flint and banged the flint against the hook. The hook let go. By its own weight, the scraper blade came down in a swooping arc and gouged into the rocky earth. The machine rocked and slowed. There was a small explosion under the hood. An instant later, smoke shot up in the air. And a split second after that, a roaring tongue of flame rose. The cliff edge was only a few feet away. Johnny stared at it for an instant, through the growing sheets of flame. The machine edged forward, buckling its scraper blade. Johnny whirled to the roll bar behind him. The flexi rope was wrapped around and around it. Pressing the rope against the metal, he attacked it with the flint. He had tried it before with no success, but on the verge of being yanked in flames 200 feet down, hope was all he had left. His back was getting scorched. He turned to face front. The instrument panel was beginning to glow red hot. The machine inched closer to the edge. Small explosions sounded as instruments burst. The searing metal of the panel's upper edge was glowing with heat. Johnny grabbed what slack he had on the flexi-rope and held it against the red-hot metal edge. The rope began to melt. It took all his willpower to hold his hands there. The flexi-rope dripped molten drops. The machine teetered. At any moment, the blade was going to go into vacant space to shoot the machine into thin air. The flexi-rope parted. Johnny went off the machine in a long dive and rolled. With a shuddering groan, the last support of the blade snapped. Flames geysered. As though shot from a catapult, the machine leaped into empty space. It struck far below on the slope, bounced, plunged to a stop, and was consumed in fire. Johnny pressed his burned hands into the cooling snow. 7. Turl was looking for Zt. When the machine finally went over, Turl had looked around in sudden suspicion, but Zt wasn't there. The crowd had laughed, especially at the last part of it when the machine went, and their laughter was like daggers in Turl's ears. Numph just stood there shaking his head. He seemed almost cheerful when he commented to Turl, "Well, just shows you what animals can do." Only then had he laughed. "They pee on the floor." They had drifted back to their offices, and Turl was now searching the transport compound. In the underground floors, he walked past rows and rows of out-of-use vehicles, battle planes, trucks, blade scrapers. Yes, and ground cars, some of them quite posh. It had not struck him before how villainous was Zt's pawing off on him, that old wreck of a Mark II. He searched fruitlessly for half an hour and then decided to try the repair room again. Seething, he stomped into it and stared around. His ear bones picked up a tiny whisper of metal on metal. He knew that sound. It was the safety slide being pulled back on a blaster. "Stand right there," said Zt. "Keep your paws well away from your belt gun." Turl turned. Zt had been standing just inside a dark tool locker. Turl was boiling. "You installed a remote control when you fixed that motor." "Why not?" said Zt. "And a remote destruct charge as well." Turl was incredulous.
"You admit it."
"No witnesses here. Your word, my word, means nothing."
"But it was your own machine."
"Written off. Plenty of machines."
"But why did you do it?"
"I thought it was pretty clever, actually." He stepped forward, holding the long-barreled blast gun in one hand.
"But why? You let our pay and bonuses be cut. If you didn't do it, you let it be done." "But look, if I could make animal operators, profits would come back."
"That's your idea."
"It's a good idea," snapped Turl.
"All right, I'll be frank. Do you ever try to keep machines going without mechanics? Your animal operators would have just messed up equipment. One just did, didn't it?"
"You messed that up," said Turl. "You realize that if this occurred on your report, you'd be out of work."
"It won't occur on my report. There are no witnesses. Numph even saw me walk off before the thing went wild. He would never forward the report. Besides, they all thought it was funny."
"Lots of things can be funny," said Turl.
Zt motioned with the blaster barrel. "Why don't you just walk out of here and have a nice crap?"
Leverage, leverage, thought Turl.
He was fresh out of it. He left the garage.
8. Johnny was a mound of misery in the cage. The monster had pitched him in there before going off.
It was cold, but Johnny could not hold a flint in his hands to start a fire. His fingers were a mass of blisters, and somehow, right then, he didn't want much to do with fire. His face was scorched, eyebrows and beard singed away. Some of his hair was gone. The old Chinko uniform cloth must have been fireproof. It had not ignited or melted, thus saving body burns. Bless the Chinkos, poor devils. With their polite phrases and brightness, they had yet been exterminated. That was one lesson to be learned. Anyone who befriended or sought to cooperate with the Cyclos was doomed from the beginning. Turl had not made one motion in the direction of that burning vehicle to salvage him, knowing he was tied to it. Compassion and decency were no part of the Cyclo character. Turl had even had a gun and could have shot the flexi rope in half. Johnny felt the ground rumble. The monster was in the cage. A boot toe turned him over. Slitted amber eyes appraised him.
"You'll live," grunted Turl indifferently. "How long will it take you to get well?"
Johnny said nothing. He just looked up at Turl.
"You're stupid," said Turl. "You don't know anything about remote controls."
"And what could I have done tied to the seat?" said Johnny.
"Zit, that bastard. Put a remote control under the hood. And a firebomb."
"How was I supposed to see that?"
"You could have inspected."
Johnny smiled thinly.
"Tied to the cab?" "You know now. When we do it again, I'll..."
"There won't be any again," said Johnny. Turl loomed over him, looking down. "Not under these conditions," said Johnny.
"Shut up, animal.
Take off this collar. My neck is burned." Turl looked at the frayed flexi rope. He went out of the cage and came back with a small welding unit and a new coil of rope. It wasn't flexi rope. It was thinner and metallic. He burned off the old rope and welded the new one on, ignoring Johnny's effort to twist away from the flame. He fixed the far end of the new rope into a loop and dropped it over the high cage bar out of reach. With Johnny's eyes burning holes in his back, Turl went out of the cage and locked the door. Johnny wrapped himself in the dirty fur of a robe and lay in sodden misery beneath the newly fallen snow.